This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. We're broadcasting live from Cleveland, Ohio, where the Republicans are holding their convention. And just moments ago, the national delegates to the 2016 GOP convention adopted a new party platform. How conservative is it? Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, who joined me on the platform committee, will join me with the answer to that question. And the nation was shaken yet again yesterday morning by another act of pure, unadulterated evil. Tranquility of a Sunday morning in Baton Rouge was shattered as three men dressed in black, clad in body armor, ambushed city police officers and sheriff's deputies. Is President Obama responsible for creating this deadly environment of hostility toward police officers? Former Baton Rouge Chief of Police Greg Ferries joins me for that discussion. And I'll be taking your phone calls a little bit later here on Washington Watch. That number, jot it down, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. The website is tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics. And in just moments, we should have a live link to the GOP platform, a document that we had quite a bit to do with, and it is it's worth your reading. We'll talk more about that with our first guest. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. All right, as I mentioned just moments ago, the 2,472 delegates here in Cleveland, Ohio, adopted the 2016 Republican platform, which, folks, it provides a clear contrast between Republican priorities and the priorities of the Democratic Party. I mean, just the way the parties arrived at their platform says a lot about the two parties. The Democratic Party platform was adopted by 15 people in a back room, where the Republicans had 112 delegates from every state and territory working over a period of 2.5 days to adopt this craft, this platform, I should say. And then later today, or earlier today, the entire Republican convention adopted the platform, and from what I could tell, it was by voice vote, but there seemed to be no opposition to the platform whatsoever. Well, just how conservative is the GOP platform that will guide the party over the next 4 years? Well, to help answer that question, I've asked Kansas Secretary of State and a member of the platform committee, Kris Kobach, to join me. Kris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you.
Hey, Kris, I know you know the platform thoroughly as we spent 2.5 days crafting it. Let me ask you, in your opinion, first, your overall analysis of the platform. How good is it?
It's great. I served on the platform committee in 2008 and 2012, and I can tell you that the 2016 platform is much more conservative than the 2008 and somewhat, well, considerably more conservative than 2012. It's the most conservative platform the party has ever had in its history, and I'm very pleased with that. And on issues of faith and issues of conscience, it is really, really emphatic. And I really like the language we got in there on traditional marriage. And I'm sure you're well aware of it, but it's a platform that speaks very clearly and very specifically about what the Republican Party stands for. And I'm really pleased to be part of that process.
Now, Kris, as we work through all of these issues, both in subcommittee and then as a full committee, were you surprised at how there was such unity? I mean, there was some opposition, but it was very small. There seemed to be a very, very strong presence of a conservative ideology that was governing the platform committee.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, I recall back to the 2008 platform committee meeting when we were trying to take a fairly moderate platform of 2004 and move it in a conservative direction, and there was a lot of resistance. This was completely different. I sense a very conservative platform committee. You can see it in all the votes. And as you know, efforts to water down our language on traditional marriage, on all kinds of issues, were soundly defeated. And I'm just really pleased with it.
You know, Kris, you know, the media tried to portray the Republicans as divided, that there was dissenting voices on the platform committee. I mean, I would be upset if there weren't people that had differing views, because that would say they shut people out. They were welcome to come and participate in the process, but in the end, when the votes were taken, the votes were overwhelmingly on the side of these conservative viewpoints.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, a wide range of conservative viewpoints. Not to, you know, we've been talking about traditional marriage so far, but you look at illegal immigration. It's the most emphatic platform defending the rule of law I've ever seen. You know, calling for a rejection of all amnesties, calling for the building of the wall. You look at the war against terrorism, calling for the destruction of ISIS and heightened security of people coming to our country under the programs of refugees and asylum. Just go down the list, balanced budget amendment. It's a very, very conservative platform. And I would say that people will enjoy reading it. And I would not have said that in 2008. It's really, really good, and it's well written. And just to give you an example, as you know, when we talked about traditional marriage, we took the extra step of quoting the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who's never been a Supreme Court justice quoted in a platform that I'm aware of. And we quoted his dissent in the Obergefell decision, where he, I have it right in front of me, he said the majority opinion reduced the disciplined legal reasoning of John Marshall and Joseph Story to the mystical aphorisms of a fortune cookie. And we just talk about how absolutely indefensible the Supreme Court's decision was with the five justices in the majority.
Well, Secretary Kobach, if my memory serves me well, I think you actually added that to the platform, did you not?
I did, and I intentionally wanted to have Justice Scalia's words echoing in our party's platform.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. You're hearing a lot of noise in the background. That's because we're broadcasting live from the Republican convention here in Cleveland, Ohio. I just stepped off the floor. I'm a delegate to the convention. And we just voted on the platform, voted on the rules. That was a little more contentious over the rules, but platform, I didn't even hear any opposition to the adoption of that. Secretary Kobach, I want to ask you this question because you're a elected state leader in the state of Kansas. What importance does this party platform have to local elected officials and local party individuals?
I think it has immense importance for a couple of reasons. One is some of the issues discussed in the platform are issues of state government and even local government. It's mostly national issues, but there are some about what we believe state governments should do, what they should be able to do. So, for example, things like concealed carry law, perfect example of a state law supported by the platform. So you can measure, a person can take the party platform and, you know, ask their candidates for state office, do you believe what the Republican Party platform says? And that's probably the most important overall purpose I see. There are so many people, especially in parts of the country where I come from, like Kansas, where to be a Republican is pretty essential in some districts if you want to get elected. And so we see a lot of people who are very liberal and who would be a Democrat in an eastern state pretending to be a Republican in a state like Kansas. And the platform allows the voter, allows a journalist, allows an existing primary candidate to say, hey, look, this is what the Republican Party stands for. I believe it. My opponent does. That's such an important purpose of this platform. You know, look, if I'm running for city council or something like that, and yet they're calling themselves a Republican, but then they can be asked, hey, do you believe in this and this and this in the platform? So I think it's important to hold elected representatives accountable, and the platform helps us do that.
Yeah, I think that without question it does that, but it also encourages elected officials, whether they're on the school board, whether on a local town council, that look, hey, the principles that we fight for and we believe in here at the local level are mirrored in this party platform, and it in many ways affirms them in their stand for these conservative principles that are still widely held at the local level.
Yeah, I agree completely. And the other thing the platform does is I would even go so far as to say it educates. If a platform is written in vague, flowery platitudes, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. It can mean whatever you want it to mean. But our platform is pretty specific, and it's well written. And so I would venture to say that a lot of people listening to this broadcast, if they open up a page of the platform and start reading, they will actually find it interesting, and they'll probably find some facts and statistics or information that they didn't know. It's a really good read, and I've never said that about a platform before.
That's true, and I think it's been more specific than in the past because of the problems we're facing because of the policies of the Obama administration. And so many areas of the platform specifically addresses the policies and the fallout that we have seen over the last 7.5 years as a result of Barack Obama.
That's exactly right. It really does. And the platform doesn't pull... with kid gloves and avoid criticizing. No, it goes straight to the point and says, what was done here was wrong, and here's how we would do things differently as a Republican Party.
Secretary Chris Kobach of Kansas, thanks so much for joining us in great work helping shape the party platform, something I think conservatives can be proud of.
And right back at you. You did great work on the platform committee, and it was a real pleasure working with you.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I know you're busy on the floor. Chris Kobach, Secretary of State from the state of Kansas. He's also a delegate. As I mentioned, he was on the platform committee. There are two parties in this country, and while I am not a big partisan person, increasingly I think we have to find a vehicle which we can use to advance those principles and those truths that we care about. And you've got to be involved in the process. Now, you might want to say, I want to be involved in the Democratic Party. Knock yourself out. Do that and try to influence. In fact, I have friends. I have good friends who are Democrats, who are in the party establishment trying to influence. Now, I have to say, they've got to be way more frustrated than I am because they have a party that won't even entertain their voice of conservatism. But, hey, we should be everywhere trying to influence as we can. And I don't know if we have it up yet. We're going to see if we can get a link up because the party is still working. The Republican Party, RNC, is still working to get a link posted of the platform because, as I said, just moments ago it was adopted. But you can check out the website. As soon as we can get it up or a link to it on our site, TonyPerkins.com, you'll be able to go over. And as Chris said, it's worth reading. I mean, there's something like national defense. Quote, we believe that our nation is most secure when the president and the administration prioritize readiness, recruitment, and retention rather than using the military to advance a social or political agenda. Military readiness must not be sacrificed on the altar of political correct social agendas, which this administration has done, end quote. On the topic of economic growth, Republican budgets will prioritize thrift over extravagance and put taxpayers first. We support the following test. Is a particular expenditure within the constitutional scope of the federal government? If not, stop it. And Chris mentioned the issue of marriage. The American family is the foundation of civil society, and the cornerstone is marriage. They don't leave it undefined. It goes on to say marriage, the union of one man and one woman. And it continues, we do not accept the Supreme Court's redefinition of marriage, and we urge its reversal, whether through judicial reconsideration or a constitutional amendment returning control over marriage to the states, end quote. And there's more. There's a call for the repeal of Obamacare and some very, very strong life language, including the call to defund Planned Parenthood. When we come back, the former chief of police of Baton Rouge, Greg Ferries, joins me as we talk about what took place in Baton Rouge yesterday. Is President Obama responsible for creating an environment of hostility toward police? That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the president nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the president has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org. www.supremecourt.org/Supreme Court.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here, and I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Millions of people are asking the question, what has happened to America? Is there hope? What will our children and grandchildren face in years to come? There is no doubt that religious liberties for all men are under attack by those who want to completely eradicate God from our history and our future. On July 30th, we celebrate the 60th anniversary of our national motto, In God We Trust. This motto has been inscribed on monuments and on our coins. It's been boldly proclaimed in speeches from Presidents Lincoln, Kennedy, and Reagan. Our national motto is a reminder to Americans everywhere that there is hope for our future. Go to InGodWeTrust.com to join the movement to restore hope across our nation. Get informed, get excited, and get your In God We Trust decal today. Say it, display it, and claim it. Again, that's InGodWeTrust.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Great to be back behind the microphone. My thanks to Ken Kulkowski, who's been pitch hitting here over the last week or so, as I've been in Cleveland last week for the platform committee. This week we're in the full convention. I just stepped off, as we were talking about, from the convention floor where votes took place on both the rules, credentials, and, of course, from my perspective, most importantly, the platform. That's been adopted, and so most of the work, quite frankly, is now behind us. We'll hear from a number of speakers over the next couple of days as things move to closure. But I want to shift gears here for a moment, because yesterday morning, the nation was awakened to yet another tragedy. The tranquility of a Sunday morning in Baton Rouge was shattered as three men dressed in black, clad in body armor, ambushed city police officers and sheriff's deputies just about a half a mile from the new city police headquarters there in the heart of Baton Rouge. Now, here's the question. I know some will say this may be over the top, but I dealt with it last week in the party platform because I believe it to be true. The question is President Obama responsible for creating this deadly environment of hostility toward police officers? Now, I'm not saying he's responsible for the event. I'm saying that he has helped foster this environment that has led to this division between the police and the public that they're sworn to serve and protect. In fact, last week in the party platform, overwhelmingly the delegates adopted language that addresses this issue. What they said was this, and this is the language: the next president must restore the public's trust in law enforcement and civil order by first adhering to the rule of law himself. Additionally, the next president must cease the sowing of the discords of division and distrust between the police and the people they have sworn to serve and protect. The Republican Party, a party of law and order, must make clear, both in words and actions, that every human life matters. Joining me now to talk about this and its impact upon law enforcement is the former chief of police of the city of Baton Rouge, and by the way, was sheriff of East Baton Rouge. You've been on the program before, my good friend Greg Ferries. Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Greg, I know that this whole incident, when these things happen, it affects the entire community, especially the law enforcement community, those both active and retired like yourself. During your tenure as a chief, I think you oversaw at least a half a dozen of shootings involving police officers, and I'm sure the emotions in this has to be pretty intense.
Very, very intense, Tony. Three of the four, two of the three officers were killed, and one who's deputy is critically wounded right now. I knew quite well. Had actually talked to the deputy Saturday evening, some 14 or 15 hours before he was shot. Quite a sad time in Baton Rouge right now.
It is, and I go back to the when I was first on the sheriff's office, at the sheriff's office back in 1982, we had a shooting where someone was lying in wait for a deputy, and I remember the impact that death of that one deputy had on the entire department. And here, this was a coordinated attack, an ambush, which took the lives of multiple officers. The psychological impact upon the department, as well as the community, is profound. But in this case, we've seen this not in isolation in Baton Rouge, but this type of aggressive hostility toward police across the nation. And it has its roots in the White House, the President of the United States that has been sowing seeds of discord over the last 7 years.
Tony, I have never seen, and I know you have never seen in your law enforcement career, a president interject himself into local police matters in such a way as the current president has done. Not only that, but he seems to draw conclusions before the evidence is in and before the investigation is completed. Stunning for a man who's a law professor.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to 2009, where there was a professor at Harvard who, during the course of a 911 call of a burglary investigation, was arrested by police, a white police officer. The professor was an African-American, and the president immediately interjected himself into a local law enforcement matter, suggesting that this was racially motivated. Later, he tried to make amends for that. But that set a pattern that has unfolded time and time again.
It has, and I remember that Cambridge incident well. He said that the Cambridge police had acted secretly. And I think this sort of demeaning language directed at police, which has continued and which has certainly been picked up by others, by the left, what it does, in my opinion, Tony, it tends to decrease respect for law enforcement. It tends, this man has a bully pulpit, and there are many people who believe what he says without question. The other side of that coin, and you know this from your extensive law enforcement experience before you started your present career, is that police officers now hesitate. There is less proactive policing, which is very, very important. Particularly in African-American neighborhoods, to protect African-Americans. Most of them, just like most of any other race, simply want to raise their family, go make a living and be productive citizens. And when the police are hesitant to confront drug dealers, people illegally carrying guns, and I know you and I share a commitment to the Second Amendment. I'm not talking about felons carrying guns. I'm talking about people using guns to intimidate other people or to perpetrate crimes. When police are hesitant to go out and proactively confront these people and regain control of the streets, what you see is a rise in crime, as you've seen in many cities over the last couple of years.
And it has a snowball effect, not only upon crime, various aspects. I mean, it has economic impact as well. Chief, we're up against a break. I want to ask you to hold on because I want to come back on the other side of the break, and I want to talk about that snowball effect. I also want to talk about the effect this has on police officers and those who may not stay in this profession or may not choose this profession as a result of being seen by the community as an enemy rather than an ally. We're going to talk about this more on Washington Watch with former Baton Rouge Police Chief Greg Ferries when we return. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch coming to you from Cleveland, Ohio, right after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, earnings reports, that's what's going to be at front and center of the market, certainly this week. Earnings reports continue, and according to the Wall Street Journal, it looks like we are headed for another quarter where earnings are going to be negative. They're estimating about 4.7% negative. This is going to be the fourth quarter in a row that we will see negative earnings. Now, anytime we see that, that usually means we are on our way to recession. But here's the other point that nobody seems to be talking about. I'm not sure why, but if I'm not mistaken, it will be the sixth quarter in a row that we are going to have revenues down, profits down, six quarters in a row. Now, I know that seems hard to believe because we're hearing about all these earnings reports doing so well. The fact of the matter is when we look at same store sales and we look at the earnings that they're not talking about of major companies, which happens to be the majority of those reporting being negative, and then we look at earnings negative along with profits being negative, this is not a good thing. And this is talking about and showing us for the last 4 to 6 quarters of an economy that is definitely moving in the wrong direction. It is virtually impossible for this administration to be taking any victory laps when we look at just the last 6 quarters alone, not to mention all the numbers from the underlying fundamentals of this economy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We're broadcasting live from the Republican Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. By the way, I'll be happy to broadcast from the Democratic Convention if they invited me, but don't hold your breath. Also, by the way, joining me in the booth here is Rich Bott from Bott Radio Network. Good to see you, Rich. All right. He's speechless. I caught him speechless. I know I'd never catch his dad speechless, but maybe Rich. All right. I'm going to continue my conversation here with former Baton Rouge Police Chief Greg Ferries. We're talking about the shooting that took place yesterday in Baton Rouge. In fact, I was at home yesterday morning, and as I got news of this, we were just ready to begin our second service at our church. And we have a number of law enforcement officials in our church, so it was it was very troubling to our congregation. But this has a snowball effect, as we've seen across the country. It's almost this unraveling that's taking place. And Chief Ferries, the law enforcement plays a very key component. It's not just about arresting bad guys, as you were talking about, but it's also about giving citizens a sense of stability and a sense of community, that they can raise their kids, their children, they can go about their lives unhindered by crime. And when law enforcement pulls back, as we've seen in Baltimore after the incidents that took place there a year ago, it has a tremendous impact upon the families and upon the economy.
Tony, it absolutely does. And let's just look at that snowball. When you have officers who don't proactively police, either because that's the policy of their chief and their city, or because they just don't want to risk getting into an incident where they may be indicted and three indicted in Baltimore and all acquitted.
Right.
But what a terrible thing their lives must have been for the last year or so. When you see that pullback and you see the spike in crime that you mentioned a moment ago, then you start to see real estate values drop, you start to see people making decisions to move to other cities, and then you start to see your city just go down in many, many ways. So that's to go back to our previous conversation prior to the break, that's why this tearing down the police is so irresponsible in so many ways, and the ripple effect is so far beyond the police department.
Well, let's take this latest shooting that sparked what we saw happen in Dallas, what happened yesterday in Baton Rouge, all sparked by a shooting of a suspected criminal who had a gun, who started to pull the gun on city police officers about 2 weeks ago, and he was shot in that confrontation. You've seen the footage of that. You've investigated a number of these police shootings during your tenure as a chief. Again, the White House, the Justice Department, others jumping to conclusions when the evidence simply does not bear these conclusions out.
I think it does not, Tony. And unlike those folks, I won't jump to conclusions because I've seen some of the video as it's used. I don't have access to all the evidence. I don't have access to the footage from the store, which I believe is in evidence. I don't have access to the interviews. So I think, to me, from what I know, and my knowledge is imperfect, it does not look like to me that it is a bad shooting. But I don't know. Here's what I know. The process will work. The investigation will take place. Investigation will be, it will be extremely detailed. And then the facts that we presented, most likely to a grand jury, and the process will take place. The process that's been in place not only in this country, but before us, before this country existed in England, the process of gathering evidence, the process of confrontation, the process that keeps us civilized in our laws will take place. And to jump ahead of that and to convict these officers, indict these officers, that process takes place is so irresponsible.
As you mentioned in Baltimore that a year or so ago, when that incident took place, there was a rush to judgment, and even if in other places where officers have eventually been acquitted when their case went before the courts, their lives are basically ruined. And you have the shooting with Alton Sterling there in Baton Rouge. If investigating that as, let me just have you put your chief hat on for a moment, it would be irresponsible for you as a chief overseeing an investigation. Of course, you would have another agency come in and do the investigation, but when you're doing an investigation, you're not going to comment on whether or not someone is guilty or not until all of the evidence has been presented. If, as a law enforcement officer, you can't do that, how is it that the President of the United States can interject himself into a situation like that and pronounce what he sees as the motivation in something like this?
Well, absolutely. Tony, let me correct the record just one second here. During the time I was chief, we never farmed out investigations. We did our own, and I put my personal integrity behind every one of them. But whoever does it, whether it's your agency or whether you have another agency come in, there is a process. You know as well. You are in the business. You're in the law enforcement business. The process is gathering evidence, interviews, doing everything that you do in a homicide investigation. It takes time, and to comment one way or the other and to draw conclusions one way or the other, whether you're a police chief or the President of the United States, before all the evidence is in, is just irresponsible.
Chief, I told you I was only going to hold you for another segment. I want to ask you one more question because I really want to get to the personal side of this, of the impact it has on the officers. Can you hold on for 2 minutes? All right. Chief Greg Ferry is going to continue holding here because I want to personalize this. You need to know what the officers go through. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to come back with more Washington Watch and your calls after this.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C., and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
It's 2 a.m., and Tommy's raspy cough has become a horrible-sounding bark. You can go rushing into the night with your little one for an ER visit, or you can teleconference with a board-certified pediatrician to evaluate Tommy, give you advice, and write a prescription if necessary. MD Live is a network of board-certified physicians available anytime and anywhere. Information about MD Live is available at hcbenefits.com. hcbenefits.com.
What's at stake in this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We're broadcasting live from the convention, the Republican convention here in Cleveland, Ohio. The website's TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. By the way, folks, as I've said before, this program comes to you because of folks like you. If you'd like to be a part of supporting Washington Watch and the work of the Family Research Council, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and become a partner so that this kind of information can go out across the nation. We can equip families and concerned citizens with the information they need to make a difference right where they are. All right, I'm going to continue my conversation here with the former chief of police and sheriff of East Baton Rouge Parish, Greg Ferries. Greg, thanks for sticking around. I want to wrap up our conversation here with the... I know you've had conversations, I've had conversations in the last 24 hours with officers from both agencies. I had the privilege, as you did, of serving with both. I was not at the top, I was at the bottom, but enjoyed my time with both. This is having a very detrimental impact upon the morale of the officers. There's a lot of frustration, there's anger, there's hostility, and that's not a good mix.
It's not a good mix, Tony, and thank you so much for holding me over so that we can speak to this. And let's just look at the two officers involved in the Sterling shooting. And first of all, as you know, when you go through the process to be hired by either agency here in Baton Rouge, among other things, you go through a psychological screening. So anybody who has a desire to harm people, be violent, is screened out. Nobody on this police department, nobody on this sheriff's office wants to take a life. So let's start with that. They took a life. That's disturbing them. But now these two guys have to live with what has gone on for the last couple of weeks, where you've had riots and disturbances all over Baton Rouge. Then you had police officers shot, killed, and wounded in Dallas, and police officers, sheriff's deputies, that they personally knew. These two guys personally knew, shot, killed, badly wounded in Baton Rouge, and that was triggered by their actions, which have not in any way been shown at this point to be improper. What a burden on these two young men. What a burden. What an unjust burden.
Yeah, it is, without question. And then you look at the other officers. And, in fact, I know one of the officers, one of the deputies, had actually traded shifts. It was an extra duty, and he was supposed to be there, and one of the deputies shot, had taken his place. And there's, I mean, there's so many issues they're working through. But then you have the other officers who now are on edge because they don't know if there's another ambush waiting, because we now see that this was a connected effort as more evidence is coming forward. I mean, it clearly looks, it doesn't look good. I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I am going to say this, as I said earlier, without hesitation. I think the evidence is overwhelming that the President of the United States, the Department of Justice, has fostered this environment by interjecting themselves in local law enforcement matters. Doesn't mean that they never have a role to play, but they don't have a role to play in every incident that takes place at the local level. And as a result, lives are being destroyed, lives are being lost, and communities are being divided, and I think that's a tragedy.
Could not agree more. The bully pulpit should be used to say, be calm, wait for the evidence, wait for the process to work, and in the meantime, support your law enforcement profession.
Absolutely. Chief, thanks so much for joining us and sticking around for so much of the program. As always, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this, and I'm sure we're going to be talking more in the days ahead.
Thank you so much, Tony.
All right. Former Baton Rouge Chief Police Greg Ferries, also the only person I think that has served as sheriff as well over the parish after he retired as chief. I want to encourage you folks, especially those who listen in the Baton Rouge area, to be praying for our law enforcement. I could hear it in the voices of those I spoke to yesterday, just the tension, the anxiety. And I recall, I didn't know these officers well. I think one of them was an acquaintance. But I remember during my time of losing some friends. And just dealing with that. And this is going to be, there's going to be a grieving period. There's going to be a long recovery process for the community, but the individuals involved. And I want to encourage you to pray for them. And it was interesting yesterday morning as I got this news. I was opening the second service of my church, Greenville Springs Baptist Church, where I attend. And I was preaching yesterday morning. And we began with baptism. It just so happened that we're baptizing a young boy who had accepted Christ earlier, but he happened to be the son of a Baton Rouge police officer. And I just thought it was fitting that as individuals, as families, as communities, and as nations, where our true source of hope and peace is found is in Jesus Christ. And that's really where we need to be looking as a nation. I believe as we have moved away from God and from His truth, and we've pushed Him out of the public square, we've seen the fraying of our society and the fabric of America. And we need to return to being one nation under God, under the same God that our forefathers worshipped, Jehovah God. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Going to open up the phone line. We can talk about the platform. We can talk about the Republican convention. We can talk about this tragedy that took place in Baton Rouge. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation this afternoon. We've got a few minutes left. I do want to encourage Christians around the country to be praying, not just for Baton Rouge and for the law enforcement officers there, but for our entire nation and for law enforcement officers everywhere across this country, because all of them are our edge, because they feel like they're being hunted. And folks, that's not a good thing. The vast majority, and I know there are some bad police officers, there's some corruption in law enforcement, but I'm going to tell you that is the exception and not the rule. The vast majority are there to protect and to serve. We need to be praying for them in this very difficult and trying time. 866-372-7234, number to call, and we're going to go first to, and let me remind you again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics. Our guests also hope to have, if it's not up there yet, we're going to have a link to the Republican platform. Let's go first to Illinois, where we have Terry on the line. Terry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm a white Christian gun owner, not racist or anything like that, but I'm afraid that eventually there are a bunch of white racists still, and their gun owners think it will turn into like a civil war. I think that's what they're trying to do, is give us a fight. Do you think there's a civil war that could happen again in this country?
You know, we are a nation that is divided without question, and I think I wrestled with saying this as I've been talking about today about how the president has divided our nation, but it's true. The evidence is overwhelming, and our nation is more divided today than it's ever been before. Well, I shouldn't say that in modern time. We've been a nation divided before. We've been divided along geographical lines. We've been divided along racial lines. I think the division in our nation today is more than ethnic lines. It is it's ideology. I do believe that we could see a nation that's coming apart. That's why I think the only hope for America, it's not going to be an election. This election, believe me, this election is not going to fix America. Now, we need breathing room. But this election is not going to bring America together. In fact, the last several elections have only driven us further apart. The only thing that's going to bring America together, and this is the role of the church, and that's why religious liberty is so important, is that it's the gospel. It is the life-transforming message of the gospel. And some would scoff at that. Go right ahead. You feel free to do so. But I can tell you, I can sit down with my Hispanic brothers, my African-American brothers, and I can put my arm around them, and I see things the same way, even though we come from vastly different backgrounds, from across opposite sides of the track. Why? Because we have an understanding of the fact that we're created in the image of God, therefore we value one another. And we want to extend that value to each and every one, that the recognition that they have inherent value because they are created in the image of God. America needs a spiritual revival, awakening. A revival needs to happen in the church, an awakening in our culture. And I believe that's the only thing that can keep America together. Again, there are going to be those on the left that scoff at that. Let them scoff. But I don't see them coming up with any solutions. Terry, thanks so much for calling, and I encourage you to continue to pray for the nation. All right, let's go to Louisiana, where Ricky is on the line. Ricky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. And I was a deputy sheriff a while myself in East Louisiana, but I just want to comment on what you and Greg Ferries were talking about. Every time they try to excoriate the police, they just the neighborhoods that need them the most is the ones that's going to suffer the most, the African-American neighborhoods. I remember about 15 years ago, I read an article in Soldier Fortune magazine saying how white police officers were tired of being called racist and being charged with murder and this. And so instead of, you know, hurry up and get to all black neighborhoods to try to prevent somebody from trying to get killed, now they're just taking their time. And this is 15 years ago now, because, you know, when they finally show up, well, it's just dead bodies. All they have to do is count the bodies. Nobody can call them a racist because they haven't arrested nobody and they didn't shoot nobody. I mean, can you blame them? And now it's 1,000 times worse. You know, just since Obama took, so the point I'm trying to get across is the African Americans, they're the one group of people that needs to be 100% on the police side instead of fighting against them, because they're the ones that's going to suffer the most for the few of these Black Panther, Nation of Islam, inciting terrorists and riots and get killed policemen, kill white policemen mainly. The black neighborhood's going to cry, just like Greg Ferry said, it's going to. Just like in Baltimore, the black people say, please come patrol in our area. Well, it's kind of fell on deaf ears, so they don't want to be branded as a racist. You know, they just get there after the body's all dead, and they just have to count bodies now. I mean, so they only hurt themselves instead of getting behind the policemen. The black races literally shot themselves in the head by, excoriating these police and you know, shooting them and killing them.
Right. I mean, the problem, the problem, Ricky, is with the outside agitators in particular, because most of the families in those communities want the law enforcement. As you pointed out, like in Baltimore, where this is absolutely happening, where police have just kind of slowed down their response time. They're not going in because they don't want another incident. And they are, unfortunately, the law-abiding citizens are the ones who are suffering. And I can tell you from experience, when I was with the city police office, city police department, I was in the bottom second district downtown area around LSU, and that was predominantly a minority community. Those folks loved the police because that meant their kids could play outside. That meant they could walk the streets at night, and so they loved the police. They were obviously the drug dealers didn't like them. And what we've had in this case, where you have outside agitators like Al Sharpton and others come in and blow these things up and drive, as the president has, a wedge between the community. When I say the community, I'm not talking about the white community. I'm talking about the black community as well, that respects law enforcement and wants law enforcement and works with law enforcement. But they're afraid now. They're afraid, and I can, again, from, and I speak from experience, that most of these crimes are solved, arrests are made, not because a police officer actually witnesses something with his own eyes. It's because he has informants, he has community, people in the community who don't want these people there, and so they'll call the police. They'll point to the evidence to get enough probable cause to make the arrest. They're not going to do it if they're afraid the drug dealers and the outside agitators are going to run the community. So it has this, as I said earlier, this snowballing effect, whereas the police draw back, the influence of the criminal element expands, the law-abiding citizens in the neighborhoods go silent, and what happens? The criminals take over. That's what happens. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We're broadcasting live from the floor of the convention here in Cleveland, the Republican convention. Lot going on this week. We hope to have several newsmakers join us. Obviously, we wanted to talk about what had taken place yesterday in Baton Rouge, and also the adoption of the platform, which I said just a little over an hour ago. The full convention adopted what. Almost everybody I've talked to who has, even those who have much longer frame of reference, most conservative platform in the history of the party. I think that's good news. It's going to be a document that I think helps shape, guide, and direct engagement in the political process. I encourage you to look through it. It's in about, I think, six sections dealing with different aspects, defense, families, constitutional law, dealing with issues such as economics. How do we grow jobs? How do we grow the economy? Why do we shrink government, for one? All right, folks, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us here on Washington Watch. As I said, we've been broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio. We're going to be back, Lord willing, again tomorrow evening. I hope you will as well. In the meantime, visit the website, TonyPerkins.com, and remember the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.